Hello, everyone, and welcome to the roundtable. Good to be with you once again. Julian Marcus is my name, and I don't know what day it is. And joining me is Matt McQuaid. Matty, it's that period of the year. I've been up doing all sorts of different things the last couple of days. I'm running on about 3 hours sleep. It's early in the new year as well, so we're still trying to figure out our elbows from our feet. So this could be a fun one.
Yeah, indeed, Julian. Good afternoon, morning, or evening. We're in whenever you may be listening to us. It's great to have your company. And yeah, I hear you, obviously, and I've been dealing with my own issues, namely COVID, as it turned out.
How are you, by the way? I've had a few texts asking how you're doing.
Oh, that's nice. Nice to hear people worried about me. Better than I was, clearly. You can hear it for a start. Still have the bloody thing. That's one issue which caused me to miss not just the fourth ever home game, but the fifth ever home game. And more importantly, Brian Gorgian's 250th for the Sydney Kings. And it annoyed me no end missing that particular milestone and also his 850th NBL game overall as a player and a coach. So, yeah, only the fifth home game I've ever missed for the Sydney Kings since it all began in 1988. So was one for a while, but it ended up that the one, which was I was in hospital, became five because of two separate bouts of COVID. So it's damn this disease, but I am on the improve, as they say, and I should be able to get through with minimal interruption and minimal requirement for you to edit out my various coughs and wheezes as you did so brilliantly last week.
I was going to say, how did I do last week?
You did very well. Yeah.
It was quite the... Yeah. I usually, to pull the curtain back, I have a list in front of me. I hit the time codes whenever there's an edit that I need to make. And usually, it's maybe two or three or five. Last week, 37. So...
yeah, there you go.
But I got all of them and I have never been proud of myself. So, there we go. Hire me if you're looking for a podcast producer. But...
That's right. Yeah, look, I heartily recommend Mr. Marcus here. Hook a brother up. Let's go.
It's a crazy time of year. Got NFL playoffs on. The NBA is in full swing. Got the tennis down here in Melbourne, which is taking everybody's attention. And in the NBL, forget about what round it is because we're just going by a daily schedule. We've got games every single night. We've got a game going on as we're speaking to pull the curtain back. It's halftime in the Adelaide Illawarra game, and it's going as we all thought it would. The 36 is up by 20. Over the Hawks. Jeez. This league. I'm glad I'm not a betting person. I never really have been because if I was and I tried it with this league, I would be living in a shanty tent.
Yeah. NBL 25 is drunk and should go home. Well, let's be brutally honest about it. It's that's what we're talking about. It's just crazy town. It really is. But that's what makes it so fun. Look, I've said this before. The league itself must be loving this. Yeah, it's just... Every game, you know, they have that whole spiel about every game matters. Well, it does. And we're seeing it night after night after night. It's crazy. There's no, I mean, Illawarra, you know, they lost those two games at home, one to Cairns, the upset of the not just the season, probably one of the upsets of the last 10 to 15 years quite easily. They bounce back and now they head to Adelaide and Adelaide's in pretty much in crisis mode, you know, losing that unlosable game to Tasmania, albeit at My State Bank Arena, and the Jack Jumpers did a phenomenal job to fight back and get that W, but they never should have lost that. So you drop out of calculations and then, of course, go to the Adelaide Entertainment Centre, nearly 10,000 screaming maniac 36 of fans, and you're up by 20 at the half against the presumptive championship favourite. I mean, throw your hands up. Who the hell knows what's going on?
I think we're going to put a moratorium on anointing any more championship favourites for the rest of the campaign.
I couldn't agree more.
Because every time we put one in that basket, they just completely fall away. So we're not going to bother with that. We're going to talk about playoff contenders from here on out. I think that's the safer bet. Because championship favouritism changes every single week. And you get anointed with the crown, and then it seems to inevitably be followed up with losing an unlosable game or going on a three-game losing skid. So 63-43 at the half, Adelaide over the Hawks. We'll keep up to date with that on delay because this isn't live. This is recorded, but it's in real time for us. Something that is already done that we can talk about that happened tonight. Melbourne United by 2 points against the New Zealand Breakers. Take us through what you made of this result, and particularly Christopher Golding is back, everybody. Don't want to alarm you. 42 points, 10 three-pointers. Unreal. Including
the game winner. He was, what can you say? He was extraordinary yet again. World-class shooter. As simple as that. And then just how he gets his shots as well. He's just, it's a beautiful thing to watch. You just, as a basketball purist like myself, you know, there's some guys that I really admire. He's one, Bryce Cotton's another, just for the way they move without the basketball. You know, too often our eyes are fixated on who's dribbling the ball at the time. And we don't sort of look at, which is, I guess it's normal. That's your, you know, where the TV is focused. But we don't often look at what a player is doing, you know, without the ball, which is so important, especially for, you know, shooters like those guys who know that, look, they're not, Chris and Bryce, they're not the quickest. I mean, Bryce is, you know, he's got speed, but he's not what he was, clearly. So, but it's just this constant motion and then using screens, you know, back picks, down screens, you know, double, look, you know, curl cuts. I mean, the whole box and dice, and just being so intelligent and using them and just in that constant motion to get shots, whether it be, you know, that classic Dellavedova handoff where he sort of curls around that pick and Dele's got the DHO and then bang, he just rises up and knocks down yet another triple. He's just an extraordinary talent. What's amazing is, I mean, yeah, he's in not the prime of his athletic career, obviously. He's more in the twilight of it. But if anything, he's playing as well as I can ever remember him playing. He's just been an incredible ball player in this league, Chris. And that was a game they shouldn't have, they shouldn't have won that. You know, I mean, obviously Matt Mooney went crazy at the end, hit that three to put him in front, but there was too much time for CG43 to do his thing. And he did, and that was the ball game. But despite, Jack White really struggling for the most part, despite foul trouble to Rob Lowe and Marcus Lee when they were trying to deal with Taco Fall, they found a way, and they found a way through one of the all-time great game breakers that this country's ever seen in Chris Golding.
0.6 of a second was left on the clock when that shot went in from Chris Golding, and I'm just looking at it again here. He's midway in the front court when he lets fly between the Hungry Jacks logo and the three-point line. The audacity to even attempt that, but you expect nothing less out of Chris Golding. 10 of 19 from three-point range, 42 points. We saw this early on in the campaign back in November before he got injured and hasn't been able to reignite to that level until tonight. Now, I know that the counter-argument's going to be, oh, it's New Zealand, but still.
It's just New Zealand, yeah.
Still.
They played well, though, even without PJC. I thought they played a lot better than they had been. And look, full credit to Petteri Kopanen for keeping these guys going, you know, and keeping them believing. And it's a hard sell when they've had such a precipitous fall. Excuse the pun. But it's they've, you know, he's done a great job keeping that squad together despite being without Parker Jackson Cartwright. So, yeah, full credit to them and for fighting it out. It was a tough loss. It was a game they should have won. But they're in that position now where you kind of say that it becomes a bit hard to understand how to win when you've been losing so consistently for so long.
They're down to an 8-15 record, the New Zealand Breakers, while Melbourne improved to 15-9. They've won two in a row now, Melbourne United, and a couple of the more dramatic wins of the season at a time where their season seemed to be slipping away. It was on the descent. Two wins like that, Matt. To go to Sydney and do it, and then to go to New Zealand and do it. We know they're in the middle of this long road trip, but to particularly win in those two places for different reasons.
Yeah, massive.
How big is that for the culture within the club and Dean Vickerman to be able to sell the message to his team that, hey, we are still that squad that we were back in October, November?
Yeah, look, I think their culture's unimpeachable. To be honest with you, I know that's a phrase I use a lot, but I really believe that. I think Dino doesn't have to say too much. I mean, it's all about, it's really process driven with them, and that's the great teams of yesteryear. I mean, that they all talk about that. It's ultimately, it's not so much about, I mean, the wins and losses are the end result, but the focus has to be on the day to day. And the day to day can be really hard. Melbourne's been awesome at the day to day process for many a year, you know, since becoming United. So, as we mentioned, I mean, they're a team that is built to win championships year on, you know, every year on year out. I mean, that's the way it is. Look, I mean, this is such a brutal schedule for them because the next two games, that's really going to tell the tale. Illawarra in Illawarra, and particularly an Illawarra team that, look, if that game holds up against Adelaide and they lose convincingly, they're going to be let's just say they're going to be very, very keen on you know, coming back in front of that great home crowd and stamping their authority as the league leaders yet again. Then you've got Perth for Melbourne after that at RAC, which will be an absolute madhouse. There'll be, you know, 13,000 maniacs, the Red Army, they'll be in full voice. And that's going to be a gigantic test of where they're at. At Brisbane, that's a game that you'd think they should win, and then a couple of home games against, which aren't going to be easy at all, against Tasmania and then Southeast Melbourne, as you and I talked about earlier, having a throwdown that could potentially determine who finishes second or third, and it's looking really likely just about now. So, yeah, still got some work to do. Oh, look, I mean, they were really impressive against the Kings, I felt, especially for three quarters. I mean, you can say there were some boneheaded plays down the stretch. Kings hit some threes late, but I don't think the end result reflected Melbourne being the much better team on the night. I really felt like they seemed like they wanted it more. I mean, you know, a lot that's kind of a bit of a throwaway line, but they did seem to play harder than the Kings for longer. Let's just put it that way, and deserve to win. And it was a great example of how well they execute under fire to get that, you know, that great look, you know, the back pick set by Christopher and then Jack White to the rack, and a great find from Dellavedova for the deuce and the win. So, but it's, you're right though. It's if nothing else, it just sort of underlines, you know, that they still are right there, and that it should be a terrific boost to their confidence moving forward.
Also, another thing to keep in mind, if this result in Adelaide holds, and well, Illawarra have had an amazing season, but if they were to come from 20 down at the half to win in Adelaide, that would be the best performance they've put in, bar none. All of a sudden, the difference between top spot and second and third is one game.
One game. Yeah, correct.
So how big is that? If Melbourne were
and then
to
they're playing each
Illawarra,
other on
yeah.
Saturday night. Yeah, crazy.
Then they
absolutely
could drop to the nine
crazy
wins.
Yep.
What,
yeah, exactly.
Season. What a season.
So, yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Because then you've got, let's say Illawarra drops to 15-8. So just looking at, I mean, look, from a percent, I think Illawarra's got a massive lead.
Percentage, they'll be fine.
They'll be fine. But if they then drop that game to Adelaide and then come home and lose to Melbourne, then Melbourne takes over top spot. And then Illawarra is now vulnerable to the likes of Perth, Sydney still, and Southeast Melbourne, even Tasmania, you know, with 11 losses. They just come back to the pack dramatically.
It would improve Adelaide to 10-12, and they would be one win outside of the top six.
Hmm.
So they're still alive. The Adelaide 36ers, very much so. Can't say the same about New Zealand. And the Cairns Taipans, of course, have been out of it for quite some time. We'll get to the rest of that in a little bit, but I have been bombarded again with messages from our great listeners, and we thank you so much for your support across the season as we've brought this show back. And I must admit, one of the reasons that I did want to bring this show back, despite the fact I missed it just terribly, but particularly at points last season with the Sydney Kings, the amount of times that I thought, geez, I really would love to get Matt's thoughts on what's going on at the moment. Haven't quite had it to this degree until this point this season. Not that they're, you know, anywhere close to what they were last year. I mean, that was, you know, annus horribilis. But the Sydney Kings, Matt, talk to me. What's going on? Where do we begin? Where do we begin with this?
Lamonte
Turner, let's start with that.
Yeah, I think that's probably an example of where, you know, there's been some failures, clearly. And there's been some failures in the front office, in all honesty. And I hate saying that because, look, Chris Pongrass, friend of the program, love Chris, known him for years, obviously. And last year, and I said this to him, I said, you're allowed a mulligan, because last year, or last season rather, was a debacle because they recruited all wrong for a start. There were guys that were in that team for themselves. Now, look, on paper, it looked great, but in practice rather than theory, it just didn't work at all. And I said to him, you know, you're allowed a mulligan for putting together a team that wasn't a team that would end up challenging for a championship. In fact, they'd get nowhere close. This year, this Turner situation, I've got some thoughts on this. Number one, obviously, you know, there's got to be some blame to go around, particularly in terms of, my understanding is that they were told this guy's condition was bad even before they were going to sign him. That, you know, and they still went ahead with it. He hadn't played in over a year. Now, that by itself is not a drama, because obviously you can point to Ian Clark, who hadn't played a meaningful game for 18 months before he joined the Kings, and then obviously was so big in the championship, the run to Chase Buford's first championship. So, you know, from that perspective, that's fine. But there were a lot of red flags with this guy. And, you know, and then to bring him all the way over here, Brian didn't have very much to do with him, according to Gorge himself. And then obviously put him in the medical triads and what they have to do and the basically all the physical stuff they have to do to clear them. And he just wasn't anywhere near ready. So that was a failure on you know, and it was a process failure across the board, quite frankly. But the thing that gets me, I'm not so even concerned about that. What I'm concerned about is, why the hell did it take so long? This is where I do not understand the whole situation. Jalen Galloway, when he went out for the season, at that point, they should have gone, bang, we need a third import straight away. That was a space that opened up, but they waited weeks upon week upon week, and I could never understand why that they didn't pull the trigger on that change. Now, you can talk about, well, could have had something to do with the salary cap. Well, yes and no, because as we know, it's supposedly a soft salary cap. We don't really have a hard salary cap in this league. There are various checks and balances as far as, you know, marquee players and the like. And obviously, I get how much they're paying Xavier Cooks, but I still don't get it. I do not understand why they didn't pull the trigger on an import quicker than they did. I think it was a gigantic mistake. I think they stuffed around for the Lord alone knows why. And the result ended up being, it was compounded by Kelly Laupepe's injury, which has kept, it's going to keep him out for the rest of the regular season, potentially into the play-in tournament. And then even further, we don't really know. It's obviously a serious hamstring injury that the young man suffered. So I've said this before, it's a lot easier to get guards than it is to get bigs. It just is, from an import perspective, especially you're talking about an impact guy. Now, I know the talk was he wasn't going to be an impact guy, but the fact of the Lamonte Turner, that is, but the fact of the matter is he would have been, because he would have been a really important piece to take Jalen Adams off the ball and give him a bit more latitude and a bit more freedom out there. Because now what's happening, and it happened in the Melbourne game and specifically, and Brian pointed to it in the post-game press conference, is that you've got a team like Melbourne that's got, you know, attack dogs in Dellavedova and Shea Illy. They're just going to go after Adams, you know, mercilessly. That's just who they are. And Adams has got absolutely, they can't go to anybody else because you've got a pair of backups, you know, earning minutes alongside of him. And again, I don't want to disrespect Sean Bruce and Isaiah Liafa, but they're not going to produce what an import can produce, at least in theory. So that's my problem with the whole situation with Turner. It's not so much that, you know, the whole thing fell apart and they, you know, he wasn't going to be signed, you know, by the Kings. They didn't even fire a shot with him. It's more the time period. It's more how long it took. And it, I just, every week I was shaking my head, what the hell's going on here? Particularly when you, you know, look, the whole Ian Clark situation, that didn't take anywhere near as long once they knew they had to get him. And again, they got lucky with him. I grant that because I was questioning the signing at the time, given the fact that I felt like they needed something, you know, someone who at least was playing consistently. And at that time, he wasn't. He played a few games in China after he got hurt, and then he was rehabbing, whatever, and then came back and he was fantastic and has continued to be a terrific import, you know, for whoever team he's played for. So, yeah, that's my real bugbear with the whole situation. And I think, you know, that, and I've said this to a few people, you sort of look at the way the team was built in the first place, and I think it was a bit unbalanced. I think it has been a bit unbalanced, and I think we're finding that out now. Now, you can't account for injury, obviously. You know, that's the great unknown with all of these things. But, you know, there are ways to overcome that if you build your squad in a particular way. And I just don't think, for the second straight year, I don't think they built it properly anyway. And then this whole 30 import situation, I just think has been a mess, in all honesty. And it's hard, again, it's hard for me. I think Chris Pondergrass done a fantastic job for this club. But look, you've got to be, I've said it a million times, I've got to be authentic about this. And you've got to, you know, the blame's got to go somewhere. And for people who think Brian Gorgian had very little to do with picking the team. I mean, people don't seem to forget that he was off kind of doing something in Paris and even before then in the off season. So a lot of this, you know, a lot of the club build was about, you know, wasn't with Gorge. And I questioned some of the guys that are playing for that team. Are they what you would consider to be Gorgian guys? You know, over many, many years. So, yeah, I think there's blame to go around, clearly, for the Kings. And lessons certainly need to be learned, and processes need to be looked at, studied, and, you know, if there's errors there, they need to be rectified.
Yeah, was Gorge on a sightseeing trip to Paris? Was it just a European vacation?
Some people think he was. Yeah, some people think he was.
Yeah.
I mean, it just pisses me off. The amount of disrespect I'm seeing for this guy is just, it's ludicrous.
And this has been largely festered
that's
online.
Mean. People say, yeah, whatever, McQuaid, you know, we know about you and Gorge and blah, blah, blah. That's fine. Objectively, his record is the best of ever. And he was still, you know, this crap about, oh, he didn't really win the bronze medal. That's garbage. Yes, he did. Give me a break. He was the head coach, and he did certain things that got them that bronze medal in a big way. So don't give me this crap about Andre Lemanis. I mean, I'm over it. I'm so over it. But yeah, I mean, look, everybody's entitled to their opinion. And look, I'm not saying he's been perfect this year by any stretch. Now, I've questioned some of his rotations. I think, you know, and I've questioned some of the substitution patterns and how it all, you know, who does what in that coaching staff. He's not perfect by any stretch. I'm just saying that I think there's just an inordinate amount of disrespect to Brian. And I think there's blame for this, the way things have gone so far, that needs to go in other directions in that organisation.
Some of the talking heads, and I say some, not all, have been asking the question, well, why didn't they just go out and get a big? This wouldn't have happened if they just went out and got a big. Because apparently they grow on trees. Didn't you know that, Matt?
Yeah, that's the other thing. I said this before. I mean, it's just, I don't know if you're making those pronouncements just to get clicks or just to get debate going. But if you know what you're talking about, you know that the biggest crapshoot of all is finding an import big that can be an impact big in the NBL. It is so tough to do. If you get one, great. You've got a leg up on everybody else. You really do. And, you know, or you get a guy like Ian Hummer. And those are the sorts of guys you can probably more likely get. But he's not going to change life for you dramatically. He's going to fill a need. So he'll rebound, he'll defend for you, but he's not going to win ball games for you. Now, he's going to be a part of a winning team, but he's not going to be the primary reason you win ball games. So, yeah, I'm not sure why people say that. You just have to look, you know, you have to study your history and study the league and what it is and study basketball and where the money goes in Asia, in Europe, in the United States, that we, as you know, as a smaller market, just can't compete with for the most part.
The criticism around Gorgian has particularly kicked off again over the last week, I've seen in different places. And again, some of the talking heads and some of the chatter online. From what you've seen this season as far as Gorgian with the X's and O's, I'm going to ask you, as a whole encompassing part for the season, What would you grade Byron Gorgian's effort for the Sydney Kings this year right now?
Well, for the one issue he's had really, which, you know, and it's never been a problem before with the Kings, is home games. You know, I wouldn't give him any more than a B, because he's lost more home games for the Kings this season than he ever has before in any season. You know, his teams were never, ever, I mean, he's above 500 at the moment, but he, they haven't been good at home. Look, I think part of it as well, and look, there is something to be said for, you know, is the message still getting through? Or is the message getting through to certain players? And this is what I talk about. You know, Brad Rosen loves to talk about Gorge guys, you know, guys that would just basically, he can coach up and they will take whatever criticism, whatever harsh language, whatever it is, and they grow from it and they improve and they get better. Because, you know, he knows more about basketball in his little finger than I'll ever know. And he's the master motivator and he's just got ways of getting guys up and about. And this year there are times where clearly he hasn't been able to do that, which for me is kind of jarring because I'm used to that, you know, having seen him for so many years and you kind of look at it and go, well, maybe the message isn't getting through to some people, but I think he's done a good job overall. I really do, considering that, you know, I don't think this is the roster that he wanted. You know, and I don't say that with any intelligence or knowledge or whatever. It's just, you know, my personal speculation. As I said, Brad Rosen talks about Gorge guys, and I don't think there's that many of them on this roster. So, yeah, I mean, to still be where they are, look, we've been complaining about them, and rightly so. They've been disappointing, commensurate to what was talked about in the preseason, which of course Ryan himself said was completely false and that this group was overrated, in terms of its overall talent, in terms of its experience, particularly bringing in, you know, they brought in three rookies, which is unusual. So in, you know, one go. And again, as he has referenced, he's had to rebuild the culture of this team, you know, this club, because the culture last season was toxic, and it was in so many ways, and it forced the departure in particular of a couple of players that, my God, could they do with right now? Angus Glover and Jordan Hunter. Can you imagine these two in this team? You know, maybe move some pieces around, particularly Jordan. You talk about bigs. I mean, that's why they are absolute gold if you can get an import big. It's very hard to do when you've got guys like Sam Froling and Jordan Hunter. Tyrell Harrison is another one that's stepping up. So, you know, Isaac Humphries is, again, you know, you kind of get where I'm going. So, yeah, to answer the question simply, I give him a B, if only because, the home record just hasn't been great.
The Cam Oliver experience over the weekend.
Talk about a roller coaster, my goodness.
The ultimate thrill ride.
Yeah.
Let's start with the beginning. Well,
it's the duality of it. It's like the Hornet. It's like the House of Horrors in one step, and then It's like riding Space Mountain in the, again, excuse the terrible pun, but Space Mountain at Walt Disney World. I mean, this is what you're getting with this guy. He was, I mean, I don't know what to say other than pathetic against Melbourne and just played like he didn't give a damn. And no effort, no intensity, no energy. And Brian said, okay, sit your backside on the bench. And he even said that at the post-game press conference. It wasn't going to happen, so I sat him. And he, by the way, he did something similar to Jalen Adams when he didn't run back hard on defense. Not just on that occasion when Dellavedova just blew past him and was about five lengths in front of him before, and then he had that layup, and Adams was barely over the half-court line. It's just ridiculous. But I give Jalen a bit of leeway, to be honest with you, because I think the back injury he suffered early in the year, I think it's still lingering. I think you can see it. During games, it's funny. The first 2 to 3 quarters, our good friend Mookie Shirali said a funny thing. He looks like he's doing his business when he's running, or he's going to he's trying to get to the toilet. I can't remember what the exact term was, but it was very funny. But then the back seems to loosen up in the fourth, and then this is what seems to be happening. So, and again, and part of the problem is, of course, now he doesn't have anybody that like people put it this way: teams are going to cheat off Isaiah Leafa because he can't shoot threes, and teams are going to cheat off Sean Bruce, as much of a great veteran as he's been, because they know he's not a guy that's going to hurt them offensively. So this is why you can focus all your attention on Jalen, and why it's going to be very interesting to see what happens down the stretch with them.
Just back on the Turner incident or issue, for lack of a better word, where would you compare that as far as a great story from a couple of years ago when John Brown III was playing a game of Where's Wally with Wildcats?
Oh, you're talking about
Lamonte,
yeah. The Where's Wally, we had great fun with that one, didn't we? So that was the Keystone Cops. I mean, it was, I remember there was all this social media stuff about, I saw him down at the fish and chip shop, or I thought he was at the cinema, and he was out jogging. We're going to get him, And it never happened. Yeah, it was crazy.
It's one of my
absolutely
favorite memories.
Crazy. I don't think it was at that level.
No,
it certainly wasn't the greatest of times in Sydney Kings history. When I can say this. I mean, God, the Kings were famous for the year of the revolving door import, like six imports in about 2 or 3 weeks at one stage.
That was a story that Brad Rosen said on this show a couple of times before he got in the elevator with a guy.
Yeah, he was playing. Yeah, he was part of the team.
Who are you? Oh, I'm playing tonight. For who? Sydney Kings.
Dave Simmons. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They met Dave Simmons. He and Bruce Bolden met Dave Simmons in that lift.
Outstanding.
Melbourne. Yeah, very funny.
Quite annoyed, though, on the positive for the Sydney Kings.
Let's talk about positives. Yeah. This is the positive, yeah.
He's got to be the sixth man of the year.
He is now. At least the favourite. I've been very high on Will Davo-Hickey. But I just think the thing about Kuwait is he's literally won games for them this year. Yeah, and case in point, Cairns, 11 points in the fourth, and just has a knack of hitting big shots when they absolutely need them. And the big thing with Kuwait is he's playing D for maybe the first time in his career. He's been a Brian Gorgian success story, no doubt about it. And look, 27 points, career high against the Taipans. Without him, they simply don't win that game. And he's been brilliant. He plays D. He's rebounding. He's even facilitating, which is not, it's not a big part of his game, but at least he's not just being this guy that just jacks up any shot that he looks at. He's being a bit more judicious with that right now. So I think he's been excellent for them and a great success story for the Kings.
Brian Gorgian, for all we said about the criticism around him a few minutes ago, a couple of big milestones for him across the weekend. 850 NBL games as a player or coach and 250 games as the Kings head coach. To have that in back-to-back games, that's quite an extraordinary way for it to roll off one after the other. But just, again, goes to show he's one of one.
He is. unbelievable record with the Kings. I mean, 71% win-loss record, 63% in the playoffs. I mean, look, just go on and on and on about it. Three championships, reached the semifinals in every of each one of his six seasons in the first stint, and made the grand final slash championship series five times, and ended up on top of the table five times at the end of the regular season. Just unbelievable. You know, and just the shame of it was that at the time, because the Kings, from a scheduling aspect, gorging his schedule again, I shouldn't bring it up, but it was more to do with television. You know, they were just, Fox Sports had the big Wednesday games and the Kings were invariably on them. And so at the entertainment center, you'd be lucky to get 3,000 people there on a Wednesday night. And this for, you know, what by any measure is one of the great teams in NBL history. Certainly a dynasty from between 2003, 2008, and yet, you know, never ever got the crowds that they deserved. And it wasn't, you know, well, probably should stop there because I'll go on forever about those teams. But yeah, I mean, he just did an incredible job and still going at his advancing age, as it were. But look, I can only go on what I see, and I still see a guy with a great deal of energy, a guy with a lot of passion, and still with a lot to give, in my opinion.
Just need a soundbite of Steve Carfino saying, "Big Wednesday," for all those spots that used to run on Fox Sports. I still have them ingrained in my mind for some reason.
There you go.
I have no idea why. No idea why. Sydney Kings, we'll keep an eye on them. Of course we've got to keep an eye on them. They are very much in the hunt, but I've got to ask you, Matt McQuaid, and we should put Tasmania in this bracket as well, because,
yeah,
I mean, for what happened to them across the weekend, the thrills and the excitement of that win over Adelaide in an absolute classic encounter to then get completely blown apart by Perth.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, and I'm going to ask you this in tandem, Sydney and Tasmania, are they legitimate title threats, or are they going to be playoffs at best?
Well, we said we weren't going to talk about legitimate title threats anymore. You know, it's funny because on the face of it,
we weren't going to call anyone favourites. We never said about title threats.
Oh, well, title threats. Yeah, at the moment,
the fine print.
I don't think so. I give Tasmania one thing. You know, that loss to Perth, and Scotty Roth talked about this as well, and I think he's got a point. That game against Adelaide was so emotional and so physical and so tough, and they had to really dig deep to win it. And then they had, what, 2 days, less than 2 days to then recover. Albeit, I take people's point, it wasn't home. But still, you're facing a Perth team that hadn't played in, what was it, 5 or 6 days or something? So they were fresh. And I think it was a classic case of Tasmania getting ambushed. They came out flat and paid the price against a Perth team that you and I very sneakily believe, you know, is being sneaky in kind of just working their way into this thing, and have the, you know, I talked about CG43 and his game breaking abilities. Well, they've got the ultimate nuclear deterrent slash ultimate game breaker, who just continues to amaze in Bryce Cotton. So on Tasmania may have some scope. The Kings, it's, you know, a lot depends on, obviously, they've still got a decent run home, you know, and a lot of home games, even though I've just said, you know, they haven't been great at home all year. But still, you would think there's some winnable games out there for them. But who knows what Cameron Oliver you're going to get? Are you going to get the Cameron Oliver that played hard and grabbed, what was it, 17 rebounds and was a force? Or are you going to get the, I don't give a care in the world, Cam Oliver, I'm just going to walk up and down the floor, I'm not going to box out, I'm not going to play with energy, I'm not going to play with effort, so I'm only going to play 4 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever the hell it was. Or are you going to get that Cairns Cam Oliver, rather? It's a big if. Well, I know what I'm going to get from Xavier Cooks. I know what I'm going to get from guys like, I mean, Sean Bruce is going to give his best effort. Isaiah Liafa isn't shooting the ball well, but he will find ways to contribute. Bal Quayle's a bit of an enigma. I'm not sure what I'm getting from him. There's a lot of ifs on that team is what I'm saying. There's guys that I can rely on, that I can count on. Kuotnoi is one of them. Xavier Cooks is one of them. And they're obviously they're huge keys for them moving forward. It's just, what am I going to get from Cam Oliver? Even what am I going to get? I mean, it sounds funny to say, but yeah, Jalen Adams. If teams are going to attack Jalen and just double up, you know, basically go after him, blitz him, get the ball out of his hands, etc., where they know that they're not going to be hurt by other guys, how he adjusts to that is going to be really interesting for mine, particularly since, again, I talked about physically. I still don't think he's physically right. You only have to look at what he did. The Jalen Adams who dunked on two guys in that Brisbane game where I lost my biscuits and it went viral, that's not what we're seeing. That Jalen Adams could blow past anybody. This Jalen Adams and stay in front of anybody. This Jalen Adams right now, just watch him. Watch the way he runs. Watch the way he moves. He's nowhere near that physical presence that he was in that championship season. So he's going to be a really interesting watch for me.
I'm framing it now in my mind, looking at the way that this league is playing out heading into the playoffs. We aren't going to get that separation from any one team. We aren't going to get that one standout. So.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it, does it?
No,
yeah.
We're too close to the end. I mean, Melbourne's got five games left. Illawarra's got six after tonight. Perth have got seven. So I'm thinking about it as if who's going to be the team that can win five out of eight or five out of nine when we get to playoff time? Because that's what's, if you finish in the top two, you've got to win five games to win the title. If you're in the playing games, and when I'm thinking about Sydney and Tasmania, I know it's razor thin still. I mean, Sydney could be one game behind, or Sydney are one game behind Melbourne, and Illawarra could be one game behind them very shortly. But I don't think Sydney or Tasmania are going to get into the top two. So with them, you've got to think about, okay, is this a group that can win 6 out of 10? Can they win 6 games in the playoffs to win the championship? I can't say that I can see Sydney winning 6 games in the playoffs. And I don't feel confident in saying Tasmania could right now as well. Perth, yes. Illawarra, yes. Melbourne, maybe, if they get back to their best. Yeah. Southeast, yep. Melbourne, yes.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think that's the four. I mean, in all honesty, right now, that's the four for me. There's potential for spoilers. I mean, Adelaide could say, I mean, look, yeah, as we said before, we're recording this while that game's taking place and the Hawks are starting to make a run. So, yeah, we know how tough Illawarra are, so they could come all the way back. But Adelaide's talent, and like they've got really a big four. I mean, Jarrell Martin's probably the X factor because you don't know what you get out of him, but he's having a good game at the moment, 16 points on 6 of 8 shooting. So, you know, if they get that sort of production out of him, look out. But look, I think they've got an MVP candidate, Adelaide, in Kendrick Davis. They've got Montrezl Harrell, who could potentially be the X factor of the playoffs if he, you know, controls his temper but plays at that high level, that NBA level that he's capable of. And Dejan Vasiljevic, if he's knocking down threes, and we've seen him do that in the playoffs. So there, I think that four we talked about is fairly solid. But if there's one team that could really upset the apple cart, I still believe, even though they're coming from a long way back, 36ers could go on a run. They really could.
2-7 on the road.
Yeah, and that's the thing that holds them back. Yeah,
that's the
I
only.
I didn't say they're going to. I said they could.
Adelaide are a team. They can beat They can not only beat anybody in this league on their day. They can blow anybody out on their day. But for every one strong Adelaide performance we get, we seem to get two stinkers as a currency trade-off.
Well, that game against Perth in round 17 at RAC is going to tell us a lot. I think if they're legit, well, there's actually two, and of course they got that, you know, the game in round 20 as well at RAC. Five of their last seven on the road. That's the thing that kind of gives you pause. So particularly after losing that heartbreaker in Tasmania. So
yeah,
I completely agree. I'm just saying that that's a team that could really catch fire, and because of the high-end talent they've got. Sure, bench isn't all that great. We know that. But their high-end talent's as good, if not better, than pretty much every other club in the league across the board, yeah, in terms of how many they've got, yeah, guys that can win games off their own bat.
I'm just thinking about, is this a team that I could see in my mind winning six games in the playoffs against the likes of, they're going to have to beat a Perth or an Illawarra or a Melbourne or Southeast Melbourne, multiple of those groups to get to the title. Six wins. Look, I could see them winning four. I don't think I can see them winning six because they're not making the top two.
Could, yeah. I mean, I suppose technically they still could. I'm sure there's the league, that ladder predictor thing. I haven't played with it yet, but I'm sure there's some permutation that has them finishing second, but a lot of things would have to happen, obviously.
Well, there's still a realistic path that Brisbane could finish top two.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's unlikely. You're right. You know, they're probably looking at more the 5-6 if they are going to make the six. And that still means they're going to have to kick someone out that's in there right now that we think is probably going to be there. But, Julian, you know, what did we say at the top? Who the hell knows what's going on or what will go on? It's crazy. You know, I just have a funny feeling about them. It's strange because I shouldn't. You know, my eyes tell me that they've been so bad on the road and they've been, that the Perth loss was just particularly horrific at home. But again, that's a team that can put the fear of God into pretty much everybody else if they fire.
Look, the way that this season has gone, it would be completely fitting that the 36ers go unbeaten in the playoffs. They come from fifth or sixth. They go on the road. They win it. Yeah. And Montrezl Harrell wins the grand final MVP. Larry Sengstock medal.
That's right. Yeah.
It would be a fitting end to
it would be.
This insanity that has been NBL 25. But I'm looking at this top six. I'm thinking, who's dropping out? Illawarra, Melbourne, Perth, Sydney, Southeast Melbourne, Tasmania. Who's wobbly?
Yeah.
Probably Tasmania at the moment, but Tasmania's got that great home court.
Yeah, and it's got, again, just going back to what Scott Roth said, you know, he wasn't particularly concerned about that loss, even the method of it, because, Perth beat, there was the biggest margin of victory by an opposing team in that stadium ever, I think. So, or at least against the Jack Jumpers. So, you know, it's he was kind of writing it off as one bad night. And considering the game they had the previous game and they didn't have that much time to prepare and, that kind of emotion sometimes can sort of hold you back in a game played 2 days later, 3 days later even, if you don't have enough time to kind of process what happened. So they came out unprepared for a Perth team led by Bryce Cotton. That's, again, looking exceedingly dangerous. And I'm just wondering if the Red Army is ever going to get off John Riley's back. But I think the only thing he'll probably do that is if he wins a championship. those are the stakes for JR right now.
Well, for them, their kryptonite is the Hawks. And they would have to beat the Hawks to win a title.
Yep.
Somewhere along the line.
Yep.
Just don't know matchup-wise. They just do not like that matchup. They've got to beat Illawarra somewhere if they are to be the team to lift the trophy at the end of the campaign. What they've got going in for the rest of the season, they've got Brisbane on the road on Wednesday. They've got Adelaide on Friday night at home, big clash. Next Wednesday, Melbourne at home, another big one. Cairns at home on the 25th, win. Southeast Melbourne on the 31st at home, massive. And you think about the Phoenix's history in that building. Then the Kings in Sydney, and then they finish off with the 36ers at home.
Everybody's got a brutal stretch, let's face it. You know, all the contenders. There's no, I think most of the coaches would say you can't point at the schedule anymore and say, that's an easy game. That's a winnable game. That's a game that I can get my guys rest. I mean, you can't approach it that way, which is the beauty of even Cairns. I mean, look, Cairns beat Illawarra at home. Give me a break.
Yeah.
New Zealand should have just beaten Melbourne. They didn't, but that was like no Parker Jackson Cartwright. They've been downtrodden against a Melbourne team that, realistically should be in the hunt for a championship. And yet they very nearly did beat them. But yeah, it's just, that's the nature of this league. As Brian Gorgian said in the post-game press conference after the Cairns victory, it's smash mouth, brother. It's smash mouth.
Survival of the fittest.
Yep.
I've got to say, though, the MVP race, for mine anyway, is over. It's Bryce Cotton.
Mm,
I think
yeah.
it's over.
I think it's fair to say. I mean, I still think that Kendrick Davis is right up there. I think that kid's been phenomenal, you know, and it's going to be a great season from him. That's probably not going to result in an MVP. Should be all NBL first team. I think he's earned that.
Oh, he walks in, doesn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, it'll be because of the whole, you know, guards, what is it, front court, backcourt rather, mix. I think it's, what is it, 3-2, 3 backcourt, 2 frontcourt. It'd be a shock to me if Trey Kell, Kendrick Davis and Bryce Cotton weren't in those three. And then take your pick for whoever you want up front. But, you know, probably Xavier Cooks and then who else? You know, that's what I'm saying. So, yeah, it is Bryce's to lose. I think that's fair. I mean, the guy's been, yeah, incredible. And as well as he's ever played, certainly as well as he's ever, you know, shot the ball, it's just been ridiculous. And, you know, he's at that point now. Whenever I watch him play, I'm just, when he pulls up, I'm thinking, layup, layup, layup. And when they miss, you're kind of like, oh my God, he missed. Yeah. That's where we're at with this guy right now. Incredible.
I feel like the Brisbane Bullets have hit their ceiling.
I agree.
The game in Gippsland the other night, Saturday night, they were beaten pretty comfortably by the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. I mean, first of all, if they are to take another game out there, and I know the Phoenix are very keen on keeping that relationship, they've got to do something about that floor, man, because that was a slip and slide.
Bad. Well, I mean, Derek Wilton Jr., you know, and that's one thing. And then there are other players slipping around. It's not good enough. You know, we just can't have that. I remember a game, well, it wasn't a game in the end, but there was meant to be a preseason game at the Newcastle Entertainment Centre. It was Andrew Bogut's first year with the Kings. That was his first year with the Kings. And we get up there and somebody had, I don't know what they'd done to the floor, but it was like an ice rink. When the teams got up there, I was actually going to be I was doing the play-by-play for it, playing Illawarra. It was a real shame because, yeah, it was just dangerous. And, look, I don't think it's the same degree as what – look, I mean, that was really bad. And obviously Gippsland was more of a – it was an environmental thing. But if you are going to take games to regional centres – safety of the players has to be the number one priority in terms of making sure the floor is fit for use and doing everything you can to make sure that you don't have situations where there's, you know, so much humidity that it makes the floor incredibly slippery. So, yeah, they've got to fix that up before they go back there for sure.
They've hit their ceiling though, Brisbane, and it's been a good season for them. Like if this is as far as they go, you look at where they've been in recent times and what they've done this year, and you say, okay, pass mark. Let's see what you got next year.
Yeah.
Maybe standards for them are too low.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of, look, they've had a lot of issues, obviously, and a lot of injuries and, you know, losing James Bateman when he was just coming into his own, that certainly didn't hurt. I mean, they pick up Josh Adams and, look, I'm not saying I'll bring him back next year, but he might be worth a look. Casey Prather, of course, has played better than any of us could have imagined. He's been terrific. And Tyrell Harrison has finally emerged as a big in this league that can be trusted to be consistent and to be productive and to be a rim protector and all those things that we've talked about him for years. They need to rebuild a little bit. You know, clearly they need a lot more talent. I don't imagine Keandre Cook will be back. I don't imagine Adams will be back. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Casey. I think he's got another year from memory, if I'm not mistaken. And even if he does, I mean, look, let's face it, contracts don't mean diddly squat these days. I think it'll be they'll look to build around Tyrell, I think. And, you know, look, if Casey can go around again and produce what he produced this year, then great. But they need help at the point. They need, more local, better local talent, I think, overall. But, yeah, I mean, look, they've had their moments, there's no doubt. And they've at least been, for the most part, competitive, which is a damn sight better than what we've seen in recent years from them. So, I'm a fan of Justin Schuler. Yeah, you know, I think he knows what he's doing, and he's a very good developer of talent. So, you know, who knows? They made the move to Boondall. I think that's been a success. I think we've seen some great crowds out there. Certainly not the 11,000 to 12,000 of yesteryear, but it, look, they're building.
Give them a
And
winning
that's
season and a
important.
playoff run, they'll get those crowds.
Yeah. So look, I think the ownership now, I think they're in the right headspace. I think they do understand what's required. So for this team to be successful, and they need to be. Now, you and I have had this discussion many times about what Brisbane used to be and what it needs to be again, not just for the city of Brisbane and for that organisation, but for the NBL as a whole. Third biggest market in the league. We've talked about that ad nauseum, but it is important that it's thriving, that it's got great community connection and all of that stuff, and it respects its history, and it's a fantastic history. They do all those things and they're commercially viable. So hopefully, fingers crossed, they'll make another step up next season.
So before we get to the picks, I'm just looking again at this Adelaide-Illawarra game, and the Hawks have raced back to be within three. Darius Days has just made a bucket with 31 seconds to go as we're watching
Oh
this.
my God.
Sam Frohlich's gone off for a 35-point, 13-rebound game. They need
Wow.
to. I don't know what the Hawks need to do to re-sign him. I mean, if they need to put a reborn
He's a
version of
monster.
Chico's and call it Frohlich's in order to keep him, do it.
Oh,
Give
it's
him
only
whatever he wants.
Chico's. It's dead and gone. Oh, it's going to be apartments now. I mean, they've just started
Of
work on it. Oh, my
course
goodness.
it is.
I'm very sad, Julian. I am very sad about that. I know they're over at Fig Tree, but that's well away from the WEC. Yeah, unbelievable. I had a sneaking suspicion that was going to happen, but as soon as they're up 20, and then, oh my God, you can imagine the Adelaide fan, the Adelaide faithful at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre. My God, they will be on pins and needles right now.
9,475 on a Monday night. That's
Ah, it's awesome. That's awesome.
so while we are watching this game, we'll get to the picks because it's another big week. I say this every week, but the games, if they didn't already mean so much, now they're going to mean more than ever. So 36ers Hawks, that finishes up tonight. Then tomorrow, Cairns Taipans play host to the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix up in the top end.
Yeah, it's interesting because Adam Ford alluded to this in the post-game press conference after the Kings game. We're talking about Taron Armstrong, that we might not be seeing him much, very much more in the future.
Oh, hold up. Here go the Hawks looking for a buzzer beater. 1 second. Harvey for three. No good.
And the Adelaide 36ers survive. Jason Kadee throws the ball away. Oh, my goodness.
91-88. I'm looking around at the crowd at the AEC, and they look like they have just been through it.
Yeah, they've been Harvey, and he's done that before. He's either hit a shot to tie it or hit a shot to win the ball game. Wow, Jason Kadee gets away with it. Yeah, just sort of getting back to Taron Armstrong. Fordy kind of alluded to it that he's talking to a lot of people about him. And a lot of people read NBA scouts, and there's potential for him to get a two-way deal. Before the NBL season finishes, I think that it potentially could be his future in the association. I have enormous time for that young man. So, if you're listening to us in Cairns, and provide he hasn't already signed a deal before the game, I would urge you to get along and watch this young man because he's a special talent. There's no two ways about that. Loved the endeavour from the Taipans against the Kings. I really did. Nothing to lose attitude, but they played hard. And that's the one thing you can say about this group under Adam Ford is that they always play hard. They just do. So the Phoenix need to be on their mettle here because if they're not, and they take them lightly, and obviously they go in without presumably Derek Walton Jr., not sure the length of time he'll be out for. It could be weeks. But they've shown they can win without him in the past. Nathan Sobey was outstanding last game. And we know what Angus Glover and Owen Foxwell stepped up in a big way as well. So we know what they're capable of. I give it to the Phoenix. I think you have to. I think they've got more to play for. But as I said, they'd want to show up with a proper attitude. Otherwise, they'll get stunned, no doubt.
Yeah, I'm picking the Phoenix because I think you're probably crazy not to, but this is one that they they should not be looking past at all, particularly with where they are. Everybody is in a fragile space if you're in and around the top six, and the Phoenix are no different. They could realistically push their way into the two as well, the top two. And not just that, but also if you finish in the top four, well, you're kind of owning your own destiny as far as home floor when you get to the big end of town. So they need to win this. They need to keep winning. And I'm going to pick them to do just that. I hope we get to see Taron Armstrong one last time in orange. I really, really do.
Yeah. Special, special talent. 40 absolutely adores him. He's talked to me at length about him, and you know, he doesn't need to. I'm sold. I've been sold for a long period of time on him. I'm massively high on him. I'd love to see him make the leap. And again, he's one guy. I love the fact that he's a young guy making his way that has clear ability to play for his country at some time, whether that be in FIBA qualification, whether that be at the Worlds, or whether that be at the Olympics. I think that's his future. He's outstanding.
Brisbane and Perth at the Brisbane Entertainment Centre. This is not the 1990 Grand Final. This is Brisbane's last saloon,
or even 87.
No.
And when they actually set what was in 87, that's when they set what was then the Australian indoor attendance record for any event, which was, what was it, about 12,300 odd from memory. So, which obviously has been eclipsed many times over. But, this is a got-to-have-it game for Perth, I think. You know, and it's a game where I just think the matchups favour Perth across the board. Bryce Cotton's going to have free reign, you know, no matter what they try and do against him. I mean, he had 9 assists. And most of them were of the absolute brilliant variety, showcasing, you know, he had the 32 3/4 when he could sit down, against Tasmania, and which was amazing, great for Johnny to rest him. But their depth and the fact that they've got, you know, Doolittle's back now. Wynn was showing what he's capable of. Huge fan of Benny Henshaw. Elijah Pepper stepping up. Keanu Pinder's a little bit of a mixed bag, but what we know just how impactful he can be. And Jesse Wagstaff just quietly having a very solid season. You know, it's just incredible with him. He's so smart, and he just figures it out. Brisbane will give a good account of themselves, there's no doubt, but Perth, just way too much firepower. They play at a pace that I just don't think Brisbane – if Brisbane want to get involved in a track meet, they'll give up 125, and Bryce will go for 50+. That's what I'm thinking. So Brisbane's got to make sure they control the tempo as much as possible. That means they're going to have to rebound the hell out of it. They're going to have to be physical. They're going to have to try and figure out a way to slow Mr. Cotton down. I don't see it. I think Perth, and I think Perth easily.
Yeah, I'm going with Perth to win this one. I think the Bullets will push them most of the way, but Perth will just be too strong when...
Yeah, way too strong. No disrespect to Coach Shuler and his boys, but it's for me, it's just a bad matchup for them.
Yeah. I'm going to say by quarter three, this one will probably be put to bed. Tasmania head over to Auckland on Thursday to face the Breakers.
Fascinating. I mean, look, they've been in games, and I said this, New Zealand, and like watching them tonight, they had no right to be as well... not just competitive. I mean, they were leading. And I thought they were on track to win that ball game. I mean, again, and it was some CG43 magic. Taco is Taco. I mean, nothing's changed there. They're still trying to – they try too hard, I guess, to get the ball to him. And he can only function in certain spots. And Melbourne absolutely swarmed him. So that's the key, because he's not – great passing out of double teams at all. Even though, you know, I mean, he holds the ball up so high. I mean, no one should be able to block it, but, you know, he just has a hard time getting the ball out of the double team. So, yeah, I just think Tasmania will be fired up after dropping that game in the fashion that they did against the Wildcats at home. It's not going to be easy. New Zealand will give a good account of themselves. I mean, Look, I think Sam Meninga's been disappointing overall this year, but he showed tonight, again, when we're recording this, that he's still got plenty of talent. Jonah Bolden has been up and down. Hopefully get some production out of him. Matt Mooney had one of his better games, at least late in that final quarter against Melbourne. So hopefully that form carries through for him. But Tasmania with Crawford, Doyle, Drimmick, I just think just a little too strong. And again, they're in a position, they've just got more to play for. So this is what we're sort of looking at, I guess, now with these things. It's who, what's more important? I mean, obviously New Zealand play for pride in front of their home crowd. They want to put on a good show. I certainly understand all that, but the reality is Tasmania's got a hell of a lot more to lose than the Breakers do, and I think the Jackies get this one.
Tasmania will win this one. Brisbane and Cairns at Boondall on Friday. So Brisbane get big Wednesday at Boondall, and then they get Friday night at Boondall against the Queensland state rival. You'd expect Brisbane to get the cash here, although if any game that Cairns are going to have in their calendar, if there's any game that they're going to have circled, it's this one.
Yeah, absolutely. The Sunshine Stoush, and they always get pumped up for this. Yeah, you're right. On the face of it, Brisbane would be favourite, but I really liked what I saw out of Cairns the other night against the Kings. They're going to fight right to the finish, and I actually am going to tip the upset. I'd like the Taipans in this one.
I'm going to go with the Bullets just to keep themselves alive for another couple of days and get the money, but it'll be a close one. It usually is when these two get together. Perth and Adelaide. This is going to be massive for Adelaide. This is the census. This is the census on the Adelaide 36ers. It's big for the Perth Wildcats as well, but this is the final exam when it comes to the Adelaide 36ers, winning games on the road. If you want to win games on the road, here's Thunderdome. Have at it, boys.
Well, they nearly gave it away at home. That game was pretty much unlosable, but they almost did. up 20 at the half, and then that incredible comeback from Illawarra. But here we are. The Adelaide's still breathing. And, I mean, wouldn't this be a turn-up for the books if they got a W at RSC Arena? The way Perth has been playing, that great performance against Tasmania, I was absolutely so impressed with what they did. The matchups Bryce Cotton again. Bryce Cotton and Kendrick Davis is that's price of admission stuff, man. I mean, seriously, these two guys are a sight to see, and I love it. I love it for the league. I love it for the entertainment value. They've both been phenomenal. Then you've got the Montrezl Harrell versus the Red Army. Look the hell out.
If he thought he loved Melbourne, he's going to love Perth.
He's going to love this. I mean, it's going to be unreal. It's going to be so fun to watch. How they react to him, B, how he reacts to them. It's, man. He'll think he's back in college, in his college days. The Red Army will put it on him. Isaac Humphries, I think, going against, a front line, Ithan Almansa and Keanu Pinder. I think up front, I think Perth might have, excuse me, Adelaide, I think have got the advantage over Perth up front. I really do. But then you've got, Bryce in the backcourt, and Perth's depth, I think, is just better than Adelaide's. But you know what? It's a toss of the coin for me. I'll stick with Perth. I think they haven't been back in a while, and I think it'll be as close to a sellout as is possible. Friday nights are always awesome at RAC. So give me Perth. I'm not 100% confident about it, but I do think they'll get the win. It's going to be a blockbuster matchup.
Perth win. Bryce scores a minimum of 38.
Yeah, because, I mean, fundamentally, Adelaide, the thing that lets them down is their inability to play D. But then Perth haven't been great defensively, although I do think with Doolittle back, I just think their structures improve. And I think they've got a few guys that are actually more committed to that end of the floor than perhaps they were earlier in the season. So, from that perspective, this could be something like in a 40-minute game, like a 118, 114, something along those lines.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Saturday evening, the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix get to go back to the State Basketball Centre for the first time this season as they play host to the Breakers.
Sellout crowd. It's going to be a wild scene. It always is down there. Great venue. I think the Phoenix win this, and they win this comfortably. And I think it'll be one of those where we're going to see the they'll go deep into – Josh King goes deep into his bench probably midway through the fourth quarter. I think the game will be well out of hand by then. I think this is an easy win for the Phoenix.
Yeah, the Phoenix get the dub here. They're going to get the cash probably by halftime. We'll see the bench thin out by the time we enter the fourth quarter. That is such an atmosphere, the State Basketball Center. Getting to go, even just a preseason game, that throwdown which went into overtime, it was a madhouse that night. And then when you get into this scenario where the Phoenix are playing host to a team from not just out of town, but from out of the country, yeah, they're going to be hanging from the rafters at the State Basketball Center. Phoenix and Phoenix win well. This is big. Saturday night, Hawks, Melbourne, Wynn Entertainment Center. I've been saying for most of the season, this is my grand final matchup. Well, sorry, championship series matchup. I still got to switch the terminology around. I'm still clinging on to that. Nowhere near as much as I was before. But the matchups that we've seen this season between these two sides have been special. Incredible. They've been noteworthy. They have been box office, and this will be no different.
Yeah. And, of course, it's a return to the scene of the crime as far as Illawarra's concerned. When that whole situation with CG43 and the flopping and the Jason Tatum losing his biscuits and the whole business. I think the Hawks are still smarting about it. Melbourne United getting the W. I mean, they took it out on them the next time they played them, dropped 106 and just dominated them. And Melbourne, look, I'm not 100% convinced about them. I mean, look, they've got a guy carrying them, CG43, offensively, but there's guys that have been down offensively in that team. I spoke about Matty Dellavedova, but also, Ian Clark. I mean, he's been a bit up and down this year. Not as impactful as what I've seen from him in the past, put it that way. And they need him to really step up. The backcourt matchups are just mouthwatering. Dellavedova and Illy on the one hand, one of the greatest defensive backcourts in NBL history. And then the best backcourt in the league at the moment, Trey Kell and Tyler Harvey at home, and Illawarra playing with, that great confidence. And they'll have a chip on their shoulder, without a doubt. They'll want to really make a statement at home. Going to be another sellout. I'll be down there to call it with Troy Pillen, which is I'm really looking forward to. We're sort of doing these special games, and this is one of them. It's maybe the game of the round. I think it's probably them and the Perth-Adelaide game for mine, are probably the two standouts. I say of the round. What am I talking about? Let's say the next 10 days or whatever, 7 days, whatever it is. Man, this is tough. I give it to Illawarra at home. I think, we know now. It's a battle for top spot. Yeah. Whoever gets the W, go. So if Illawarra loses again, they will fall into second place and give other teams like the Kings, the Phoenix, the Wildcats, obviously, motivation to really push for a top two spot and put them right back in calculations. So much on the line, isn't it? But give me Illawarra. I think the Hawks will they've already played them, I know, but it's more what happened the last time they were at the Sandpit. So I think the fans will be on everyone's case in Melbourne, particularly Christopher. So let's see what happens. But yeah, give me Illawarra. Wouldn't surprise me if it went to OT.
If results go the way that we expect them to go by the time we get to this game and Melbourne were to pinch it, that would mean that there would be two wins between first and sixth.
Insane. Yep. Absolutely insane. How much do we love the NBL, honestly?
This feels tighter than ever than it has been. I know we get exciting playoff races most years, if not every year, but this feels as tight as it's ever been, certainly in my time covering it.
Yeah. Oh, look.
Granted, only about 7 years.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, I've talked about this before. Most years you do have that kind of juggernaut team, or at least two teams that kind of separate themselves, maybe three. But this year, and you know, you kind of get a sense. I mean, look, obviously the Jack Jumpers, that was a fairy tale last year and all of that. But you knew that, like, they were consistently good throughout. I mean, they finished third in the regular season, right? So they were consistently good throughout the year. And there's been other years where, yeah, I mean, the couple, 3 years in particular, I remember it was New Zealand Perth and everyone else was just irrelevant, you know. And one particular season I remember too, they were the only two teams above 500 and everyone else was below 500 in the regular season. It was crazy. But it's just, this is what we've parity. It's what we have in the league. It is phenomenal. I mean, look, I know New Zealand Cairns, they're not going to make the playing tournament, but that's still 80% of the league still has an opportunity to make at least the playing tournament at this stage of the year. That's phenomenal.
Sunday, Sydney and Tasmania at Qdos Bank Arena invokes memories of the championship series of 2022. And there's a lot to play for in this contest as well.
Enormous amount. The Kings, again, haven't been great at home. They were lucky to beat Cairns in the end. The last time they played Tasmania in this venue, it was their best win of the season, at least by margin. They beat them by 28. So you never write off the Jack Jumpers. If you do, you're an idiot, because of what they are, because of who their coach is, and they've got underrated talent in some respects. And the Kings, look, who the hell knows what you're going to get out of Cameron Oliver? What are you going to get out of Jalen Adams? And I know that sounds funny to say, but as I said, I'm not convinced he's physically right. You know, he's certainly nowhere near the explosive force that he was two or three years ago when he, you know, was the league MVP and led the Kings to a championship under Chase Buford. So, yeah, it's hard, this one. Won't spend too much time on it. I'll give it to the Kings. It'll be a bit of a grind again offensively because for them, that's been a real problem for them, the problem most of the year. And the Jack Jumpers have got a way of turning games into a bit of a grinded out, you know, physical battle. And I think that's what this is going to be. But I think at home, you know, should be a good crowd at Qdos. I'll give the Kings the nod without much conviction.
I'm leaning the way of the JJs, but without any sort of confidence at all. Flip the coin, then flip it again. Cairns and Adelaide on Sunday at the Snake Pit in Cairns. Well, this is, again, if the matchup in Perth wasn't a census on Adelaide's road form, this certainly is.
Yeah, again, I mean, they're in this position now, Cairns, where they become the team that, look, they're not going to be easy to beat at all, and I'm not suggesting that, but it is a got-to-have-it game for the 36ers. They must win this game. If they put themselves in a position where, you know, they just their margin for error is a lot slimmer than everybody else's that's fighting for that playing spot at least. So I think a game like this, I think Kendrick Davis and Montrezl Harrell can do some serious damage. And I think up front, you know, I think Isaac Humphries is set for a big one as well. So I think the 36ers get this. And Cairns will give them a run for their money. Don't get me wrong. But I just think 36 is too much firepower. And I think they get this in the end by maybe 8 to 10 points.
Illawarra and Brisbane, the two foundation clubs next Monday at the WEC.
Illawarra, not. I mean, you don't have to spend too much time in this. I think it's a blowout. Yeah. I think, as much as we love that whole romance of the two foundation clubs left in the league, Illawarra, of course, being the one that's unbroken right through since 1979, I think the Hawkeyes get this, and I think they get this very, very easily.
So they're your picks for the next week in the National Basketball League, and that will carry over into round 17. 20 rounds in the competition, round 17, so the finish line is well and truly in sight. Matty, we got some sad news on Monday. The passing of Darryl Pearce, the Iceman, one of the greats in the National Basketball League, and certainly with the Adelaide 36ers. He was there for their very first game when they trotted out as the Adelaide City Eagles way back when at the Apollo in 1982. Won a championship in 1986 with the club, that amazing team of 1986. As his jersey retired by the 36ers, they had a moment of honour for him tonight. Both the Hawks and the 36ers wore armbands. I saw Ken Cole being interviewed on the TV coverage as they were paying tribute to him. He also won a championship with the North Melbourne Giants as he went there in the twilight of his career in 1994, pulled up stumps after the 95 championship series defeat at the hands of the Wildcats. Maddie, tell us about the Iceman.
Yeah, this really hits hard for me personally. I knew Daryl a little bit, sort of ran into him a few times at various events and games. And just a fantastic, first of all, I mean, obviously people have said this, that he was a very funny guy. He was a lovely guy to me. And yeah, just from a personal perspective, just a terrific human being. So that's where you start with. I want to sort of pay my respects to his family, and they must be going through absolute hell. And also the South Australian basketball community. He meant so much to that state. I know he went to the North Melbourne Giants, as you mentioned, to win that championship with that incredible team in 94 that featured D-Mac and, I mean, Pat Reedy and going down the line, Paul Rees. And, I mean, just an amazing team those guys were to win that championship kind of out of nowhere and coached by a young genius named Brett Brown, who would go into fame and fortune later on. So it was great to see him get that second title because he deserved it. But really, it was with Adelaide that he made his bones. You mentioned the 86 team, and I've never seen a better team. I know that Joey Wright and I, God bless that man who I love, have those arguments because of his Brisbane Bullets in 2007 and what they did winning 21 straight games, which is unprecedented.
We've got to have that debate on this show sometime.
We probably should get Joey on at some stage. But that Adelaide 36ers unit, 1986, they were called the Invincibles for a reason. They lost two regular season games all year, both games by less than a bucket, and I saw one of the losses live. It was at the State Sports Centre against the West Sydney West Stars. I nearly said Razorbacks. West Sydney West Stars.
They wish they were West Stars.
That's right. And the enduring memory, there was no television. No television recorded it. Our good friend Boddy Nodge said there was zero chance. He didn't travel with the team that week because he thought it's a waste of time. They're going to win by 30. There's zero chance they're going to lose. And of course they did. And I remind him of that very often. He's never lived it down. But the enduring memory is our friend, one of my heroes, actually, the great Ken Cole, you mentioned him just then, chasing the referees into the dressing room after the game. It was very funny. Of course, he had the cowboy boots on, the whole thing. Anyway, getting back to Iceman. So Iceman was a key part of that team in what was a phenomenal backcourt with me and Al Green. And he's one of, without question, one of the greatest perimeter shooters this country has ever produced. His stroke was as pure as the driven snow. It was a beautiful thing to watch. He was beautiful. I mean, you talk about Chris Golding being a world-class shooter. Well, this guy was Chris Golding before Chris Golding, as far as shooting is concerned. He was remarkable. He's right up there. I mean, if you talk about the greatest shooters in that I've seen in my time, from going way, way back to Eddie Palabinskas to Ian Davies, the late Ian Davies as well, to obviously Drewy, to John Riley, and Daryl Iceman Pierce. He was an amazing shooter, played for his country, played in a very famous tour against the Soviet Union in 1987 before the Seoul Olympics. He played actually for Australia at the FIBA World Championships back then in 86, played for his country in 88, and was just one of these guys that was just, he was a great competitor. Quietly. Now, he just went about his business. He wasn't flashy, but, man, his ability to shoot from deep was just unbelievable. And, you know, I remember him having 48 one time and just being astounded by just how it was just one. It was a swish after him. The old Apollo was known as one of the great shooting gyms of all time. And he owned the place. And of course, you know, he was part of the, you talk about the 86 team that went 24-2 and won the championship. But then they also had an amazing team in 85 that lost to Cal, our good friend Cal Bruton and Leroy Loggins and the Brisbane Bullets in the what was the final single game grand final. It was held at Brisbane's home court, Chandler, in Brisbane. So, and then, but then from there, they picked up a guy called Dwayne Nelson as a sixth man, and off they went, and they were just unstoppable. But yeah, it's a massive loss. It really is. And you know, when I think he's just 8 years older than me, he was a big part of my formative times with the NBL. You know, particularly in, you know, in the mid 80s, sort of the early to mid 80s when he started, and then all the way through with that North Melbourne Giants unit and winning that second championship. So it really hit me hard, Julian. It's one of those things where, you know, certain players and that you run into and you get to know a little bit. And he was just one of those great people and one of the most entertaining players that I ever saw. Just from that ability just to shoot the ball. He's one of the greats, and I think everyone will miss him.
Yeah, we send our best to his family, to his friends, to the 36ers community, the South Australian basketball community, and anyone that had anything to do with the Iceman. His jersey will forever remain from the rafters at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre, pride of place, and certainly with an added sense of poignancy tonight on a night where Daniel Johnson's number was retired by the Adelaide 36ers as well.
Happening, yeah. Congratulations to DJ. I mean, look, yeah, maybe one of the underappreciated across the board superstars that we've had in this league, I think. Maybe because he played for Adelaide, but yeah, great player. Yeah, well, one of the great offensive big men that we've seen. And look, you can talk about his defense or lack thereof or whatever, but he's a great ball. He was a great ball player, DJ, and thoroughly deserved his number retired. And it's just in some ways unfortunate that wasn't necessarily the entire focus of the night, the kind of you were hoping that it would be. But I'm sure, you know, he would understand and certainly pay his respects to another great ex-Adelaide 36er in the dearly departed Darryl Iceman Pierce.
So it's fitting with all of that, taking into account that it was the 36ers 91-88 winners over the Hawks tonight at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre. Matty, I'm really looking forward to hearing your call on Saturday in Wollongong. I just wish I could join you in person.
Absolutely, mate. But we'll hold the fort for you, and looking forward to calling with Troy, Mr. Pillen, the truck, who hasn't lost a step. He's been terrific in the games that we've called. So, yeah, I'm looking. Look, you know, I love getting down there as much as I can, and especially the way things are. Again, sellout crowd, great atmosphere. And can't wait. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I dare say there'll be a playoff game with my name on it in Wollongong at some point, particularly if they get to the championship series. Like I said on this show a couple of times this year, if there is a night where the Hawks can win the title at home, I'll take a train. I'll be there because I want to see that in person, because what it would mean to that community to win the title with everything that has happened over the last few years, and you go back even further, the 2010 Save the Hawks campaign, everything that Illawarra Mercury has done. So much has happened since they won their first and only championship way back when. It would be a special night if the Hawks are to get there. But there's a lot still to go under the bridge between that and tonight. 15-8 now, the Hawks, only one game above Melbourne and Perth at the top of the NBL table. That's all we've got this week on the roundtable. Thanks so much, Shoe Company. We'll be back again next week, and there's always plenty to chat about. Enjoy your week.